Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name's Nolan.
And this is Elements, our monthly bonus episode brought to you by our philanthropic patrons who support the show on a monthly basis. You can find out how to support us, how to get some perks and bonus content as a part of that package by visiting patreon.com/NGP podcast for more information. And we have certain milestones, certain goals that we aim for as a part of that patronage. And one of our goals that we promised that if we hit, we would provide you with this additional content was one where we would create a series once a month. Well, it was really just a once a month additional bonus episode, which we created a series called Elements.
So Elements is a chance for us to go a little deeper into a game and to specifically pick some games that we're interested in talking about both. And sometimes to live outside even the confines of retro gaming, depending, though that's still where our hearts mainly are. During an Elements episode, all we do is we take one element of a video game, maybe the characters in that video game, maybe the music or the story, those sorts of things, and spend the whole episode talking just about that. So instead of trying to take a game that has been randomly selected for us and cover it completely, good, bad, and otherwise, we get to just go in depth into something that is usually a standout or interesting to us or especially noteworthy and worth talking about. And so a totally different kind of take on what we normally do, but a fun way to look at some games and talk about them.
So for this episode, we are dealing with a single game. It is a role-playing video game developed and published by Square. It was released in 1995 for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. And we were talking about right before we hit record, this was created by a dream team. Like, the best of the best in early JRPG. So you've got a guy that was the creator of Square's Final Fantasy series. You've got another guy who was a freelance designer and creator for the Dragon Quest series. And then you've got a manga artist who did work on Dragon Quest and Dragon Ball.
The Trinity.
Oh, yeah. So this team came together and, man, just a mega stacked team who presented and created something that was an immediate critical and commercial success. In fact, it's regularly touted as one of the best video games of all time, and for good reason. There's many characteristics about this video game that make it what it is. We could have talked about the music. We could definitely talk about the story, and you'll get traces of that in today's episode because the story is complex and unique. There's time travel involved. If that hasn't told you enough of the game that we're going to be playing, I'll let you know that for this special Elements episode, we are going to be talking about the characters of Chrono Trigger.
So with any major RPG that we talk about or any major game that we do in Elements, we deep dive and get pretty detailed on something. So here's your spoiler warning right here. Also, another disclaimer, we're not experts. We're just giving our thoughts and our opinions. So we're going to miss a lot. This is a humongous game. So keep that in mind. You've been warned.
And this is a scary thing to do because this is a beloved classic. And so if we do something wrong or have an opinion that is different than the majority, we'll probably hear.
It's okay.
It's fine. We're going to start off with the central character of the game, the protagonist in Chrono Trigger. And his name is Chrono. So,
so it's, you're, You're going to be telling us about Mr. Trigger?
No, oh. See, so it's a little confusing because Chrono Trigger, the title of the game, is Chrono, spelled like chronological, C-H-R-O-N-O. But in the English translation, for his name at least, we got Chrono, which is without this H, so C-R-O-N-O. And he's the silent protagonist in this game. And I think they did that on purpose. I don't know what I feel about silent protagonists. I'd love to hear you, the opinion of both of you. But I think the reason they do this is so that the person playing the game can become that. So that, like, Chrono is you. You know, like, right. I think they do that so that they're not spoon feeding you the emotions that you're supposed to feel, or the reactions or the behavior, but that you as Chrono, as the protagonist, are being able to live out and experience those emotions and feelings. What do you think?
I agree. Like, that's probably the thought behind it for sure. Or they don't want to have to write more dialogue into the story, but I think it'd be easier to do that. So, like, with a lot of RPGs, you have silent protagonists, and it works. But in this one, you haven't even gotten into him, but I don't know how I feel about Chrono being silent in this game.
I agree. I think there's many moments where he needs to speak, and he needs to show emotion, and we need to know what he's thinking or feeling, but we just don't.
Right.
I'm kind of good with it. I understand some of your hesitation just because how they go about his character, but I do think it does leave that intentional gap for kind of owning the roleplayness of it and, you know, being the titular character. I think it's okay for it to be sort of an implied first person. It's not first person by any means, but giving that space works for me.
Yeah. Well, you've probably seen the character model before. He is the iconic JRPG kind of character. So when you think of JRPG, you might think Cloud with that spiky hair. You might even think of Goku or something like that. I mean, this guy falls right in line with either of those universes. He's got this spiky red anime hair. He's wearing this light blue tunic with some kind of like yellow napkin. It's not a napkin. A yellow, what is it?
Great.
Ascot tied around his neck. And he's wielding this huge katana. Now, not Sephiroth huge, but it is a girthy katana.
It's a girthy one for sure.
For a katana, I don't know. I would say the Buster Sword has girth, but I don't think katanas by definition do.
I just wanted to use girthy to describe this katana.
That's fair. All have to use that word in our descriptions of our characters now.
I bet we can make it work.
I feel like I have the only character that's actually girthy that we're going to talk about.
No, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Let's move away from girth for just a minute and talk about this this character who is actually from the present. So a big plot device in Chrono Trigger is that there's time travel, that you're going from different eras of time in the future and in the past to try to piece together the story and to try to affect things in certain ways so that you can vanquish this ultimate evil that is coming to destroy the world. And so that's what the story ends up becoming. Now, the story starts in what is the present of the video game, which is like 1000 AD. And Chrono is this young 17-year-old boy that wakes up and he leaves his mother's house a la Pokemon. And he is going to this festival they're celebrating. And it's this Millennium Fair or something. Yeah, Millennial Fair. That's what it is. And they are there to celebrate. And one moment, Chrono is playing at this festival, and the next moment he's saving the world. There's a few things that happen in between there, but he is the guy who just life was just starting off just like any other day, but through a series of events, a time portal opens up. It sucks this new girl that Chrono met at the fair into that time portal, and then he follows her through because you get the sense of courage, and of he's not just going to sit by and let things happen, but that he's going to be an active agent in bringing resolution to whatever the situation is. And so he jumps in that portal after the girl, and man, it just goes from one thing to the next thing, to where he's going to to the end of the world as we know it, and to the beginning of the world as we know it.
Yeah, they really don't waste any time there. You kind of just get thrown in there. And Chrono is all too willing. I've always thought that he was kind of like, okay, I'll run into this device after this girl I just met.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've always thought that. He just met the girl. I'd be like, you know what? I'm going home. My mom.
Yeah, I'm good on that.
And that's why you guys aren't star characters in your own video game.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably true, because I would not be as willing or as adventurous or courageous or whatever, or stupid, whatever characteristic you want to go with, as this young boy.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I kind of think Chrono is one of my least favorite RPG main characters.
Interesting.
Like, we're going to talk about most of the party, not all of the party that you play in this game, but he's one of my least favorites.
Well, I think the rest of the party, you get to know more about their character and their story, because they've got character and story, and they've got dialogue. I think that's one of the things that lacks here. Yes, it puts you in the driver's seat of who Chrono is, how he's feeling, what he's experiencing, but you don't get to know him as an individual outside of your own feelings and emotions.
Sure. But they made him look cool. That was important.
They made him look.
But they made him look cool.
They made him look super cool. And when it comes to fighting, which you do that a lot in RPGs, he's a well balanced character. He's got no major weaknesses, and he's able to equip strong weapons throughout the game, which ends up making him one of the best damage dealers in the game. And another little known fact, but one that I really appreciate, is that he's left handed.
Ah, little. You're left-handed too, right?
Right, a little lore there. That's why. That's nice. One of the things that I do like with him, and
his left-handedness.
I will add one other element here. Again, Nolan, you gave a spoiler alert at the beginning, but there is a moment in this game where you actually play without Chrono. It's well over halfway through the game. Chrono, because of this kind of character and attributes that we've described here, he willingly sacrifices himself to save the lives of his team members. It's in this first battle against this great evil named Lavos, and where you see this Lavos's true powers, and the team is utterly decimated. Everyone's laying down, about to die. Chrono steps up to continue the fight, and in doing so, sacrifices himself to save his friends. You can eventually get him back, but you don't have to. That's why I needed to bring this up here, because it's an interesting twist in that you can play this game through and lose the main character.
It's crazy.
There are many games. There are many games where you lose a character.
Right, but not the main guy.
but not the main guy. And in this game, you can lose the main guy and not get him back.
It's nuts.
It is nuts. And that is Chrono.
I'm up next with my first pick for my character, and I chose Luca Ashtier. Luca is Chrono's childhood friend. She is an inventor and an engineer. So they grew up together. She... While Marl was in the game is more of the, I don't know, feminine princess.
The love interest.
Yeah, the love interest, that kind of character. Luca's more of a tomboy and just Chrono's pal. And so you're introduced to Luca at the beginning of the game when Chrono and Marl go to the fair, and her telepod, this new invention that she's made, is being displayed. And the invention is like, it will just teleport you from point A to point B, but we know that it goes wrong and it ends up causing some time problems. But Luca's pretty important, because without that stupid invention, this game wouldn't have plot.
Does it go wrong or does it go really, really right?
Yeah, it depends on who you talk to. I mean, to them, it's probably really bad, but to us, it's great. Yeah, but so that's how Luca is introduced. Her personality is pretty light. Usually has some humor to add to a situation, and but still maintains like somewhat of a heroic attitude throughout the game. So that's what I appreciate about Luca, is that they were able to write a character that maintains that level of silliness, but doesn't get ridiculous where you're like, okay, I really hate this character. I'm never using her in my party. So I thought they delivered well on that front.
She's kind of like Blue Power Ranger. I don't know if you remember original, but just the kind of like smart, somewhat nerdy.
Oh, the nerdy, yeah.
But very friendly.
Yes, very nice, and interacts nicely with most of the party throughout the game. Let me describe her. She's got purple hair, short cropped purple hair, pretty short. She wears this nerdy like pilot helmet is what it looks like. She has this orange tunic, looks like Goku. And
yeah, Dragon Ball Z for
just,
sure.
Yeah, just picture Dragon Ball Z on most of these characters. And she wields a gun. So she's a ranged character, but she also has a melee hammer that sucks, though. It's not how you want to use her. One of the reasons I really love having Luca in my party and using her in battle is her ability to implement really powerful techs. So yeah, this game has auto attacks, and it has like magic, and it has tech, which is the like special abilities that each character has. And she is a fire based character, so she uses like fire in most of her, pretty much all of her techs. And I've always liked fire characters in RPGs, and so she's just kind of like a really nice secondary character for me.
And one of the things that's really cool and with these techs is that sometimes you can combo.
Yes.
So if you've got multiple characters that learn techs together, that you can use two or even three to do a certain superpowered tech together, a superpowered ability together. And so there's often one between her and Chrono where she lends to him her fire ability while he's doing kind of the cyclone spin with his sword. And instead of just doing a cyclone spin, it's a fiery cyclone spin because they do their power together. So it's super cool how not only are they friends in the game, but they're friends in battle. And you can see that as they work together. It's a really cool way to do it.
It is. And one of the things I like, not just about her character in terms of her techs, because there's some fun ones, but in terms of Chrono's role in the game, Dustin, just briefly going back to yours, and that is he is huge as a party asset, not just for being strong, but for his ability to add techs that synergize with other characters, which is a lot of fun. Like, he's the guy that if you want triple techs, you're pretty much going to.
Yeah.
So that brings us, I guess doesn't bring us, we can just randomly jump around since this is a game about time travel. That takes us to our next character, Isla, who is interesting, and I chose to talk about her for a couple of reasons, but mainly because she does a pretty good job of breaking, to some degree, a lot of the female stereotypes that you get from characters in RPGs, especially early JRPGs.
So what do you mean by that?
Well, primarily, Isla is a really, really strong physical fighter. She doesn't use any magic.
She's like a brawler, kind of.
Yeah, she's a brawler. She's a fierce, primal, kind of hands-on physical character. And that makes sense in her story because she hails from a time in this universe before magic even developed.
Well, she's the oldest character in your party, right?
Yeah, we're talking older than everybody else by a lot. Not by a couple
BC.
Years, but by millions and millions of years. Her storyline happens 65 million years before all the rest of the characters in the game. And so your party at one point travels back in time to 65 million years ago and is looking for some items to help kind of move the story forward and runs into Isla, who is the chief of the Ioka village, because she's chief because she's this strong, fierce, empowered warrior woman. And so they go back and work with her to help with some current things going on and also to move the greater story along. And we find out a lot about Lavos, the kind of overarching enemy that's a problem with the whole thing. And in the meantime, we meet this cave woman warrior. And when I say she's a cave woman, I mean that literally. They even have her talk and dress like a cave woman.
Yeah, she's got this broken kind of dialect. She doesn't know all the words. She has to learn certain words as it goes along. And even later, you've got this time traveling ship that ends up getting wings and can fly around. And she equates it to like a bird or something like that.
Yeah. So completely primitive, and is primitive even in the way she fights. She doesn't use weapons, though she's sometimes depicted having a club. She never actually uses one in the game. She just fights with her fists and has a lot of, you know, fighting techniques that are kind of animal-ish. And so she just jumps in and, you know, rolls around and attacks like a cat and uses her tail and does all of these moves that are very just, you know, strong and fierce and primal. She also has this sort of side character thing going on where she's primal in some other kinds of ways. She's got this weird, like, sexy empowered thing going on where she can not only like charm, literally like seduce an enemy to steal items from them. That's a really important mechanic in this game. But she kind of is flirty with some of the other characters, and that's probably a good thing because she ends up being the sort of matriarch of a long 65 million years, how realistic is that, set of descendants that are the leaders in the future. The you know, queen, king and queen of the country are from her loins, if you will.
Oh,
and
gosh. So, I think she's even related to Marl. Like, I think, yeah, the royal lineage.
That's what I'm saying. Like, she's the leader then and spawns the leadership, presumably, uninterrupted for 65 million years. Anyhow, just she's because of all of those things, she's a very different take and is a lot of fun. If you want a strong, can take a hit, easy to equip because you don't need to buy items for, just brawler that'll run in there and, you know, literally like run into battle on all fours and attack with her limbs, and that sounds fun to you, then Isla is a character to check out a little bit.
One last really cool thing about her, and you get this along in the story, is that because of her limited language, when she finds out about the huge creature that is crash landing from space onto Earth, she's the actual one that names him Lavos, because La in her language means fire, and Vos just means big, so big fire or fire big.
Sick.
Is and so she, you know, millions and millions of years ago, ends up naming this creature that ends up being the final boss and the main antagonist in this video game. And it's super cool that through time travel, you come across some of these characters that have such such huge impact on the story at large.
Yeah.
So my next character is Magus, and there is so much to his story. I think this is probably the most layered character of them all.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to have time to do it all here, but I'll present it to you in the same way that kind of the game presents it to us, and that Magus, we first hear of him kind of when like maybe even in 1000 AD in the present or something. We see a bunch of minions circling around a stone statue chanting to this shrine of Magus, and so we're like, okay, so what is that all about? And it just kind of gives you, it drops hints here and there for a while until you go 400 years earlier and you see that these mystics, these magical creatures, were led to defeat a group of humans. They were led by this figure, this demon king named Magus. And it's, we get these confusing and conflicting stories, but it's generally believed that he is the one that brought forth Lavos, this huge antagonist, this huge enemy. And originally, we think he's from the Middle Ages because that's where we interact with him first. We know that Frog has some relation with him. Frog is a character we'll talk about, but Frog is also from the Middle Ages. And although he does have his story wrapped up with that toad, you eventually find out that he's from a much earlier time. In fact, he's from 12,000 BC. And you only get this slowly revealed. I mean, it's fairly obvious because of hair color and because of kind of some of the attitude and some of the broodingness of the character. But you meet Magus as a young boy before he was warped to become kind of this evil enemy. At first, he's one of the antagonists, but later he kind of becomes one of the protagonists in Chrono Trigger. So, real quick, when you go back in time to 12,000 BC, you meet Magus as a little boy. His name is Janus. He's probably around 10 years old at that time. And his mother is the leader of their land and the kingdom of Zeal. She's the queen of Zeal. His sister is this princess who ends up, terrible things happen to her, and we don't even know her fate, really. And then so he... through a series of events, he and those other three, they're not called prophets, but those other three guys, they get warped from their time there in 12,000 BC into various times. So you've got one in the past, you've got one in the future, and then you've got one in your modern day time. Melkor, I think, is his name. And he grows up kind of with this hatred, with this, because of the things that were done to him and done to his sister, that as he matures, he takes on the pseudonym of Magus and embraces magic as a means to control those around him and eventually to reach his goal, not of bringing Lavos for the first time, because Lavos, you find out in the story, has been here for a long time. He's bringing Lavos back so that he can enact his revenge against Lavos. So, goodness, I know there's a whole lot going on there, but what you can know about Magus is that he's this deep character that these characteristics and qualities pervade his whole character to actually his battle tactics. And I really appreciate that. At some point later in the game, you can either fight him, and I think you kill him, or you can welcome him onto your team. And if you do, he's a great person to fight with, but he cannot learn double techs. And he cannot learn triple text without certain gemstones and finagling. And he speaks much less to other characters. And all of this is a testament of the fact that he can't really be in true human correspondence with his peers because of all of this internal conflict that's going on within him. I just love it.
And I really, really like how they fake you out. For a while, when I first played this game, I thought Magus was the boss.
He's the enemy. Yeah.
I thought he was the guy, and I was like, wow, because they present it so dark and eerie. And then later, it's like, oh, wait, I can play him? He's a playable party member? It's
sure.
So cool that they did that, and I also really appreciate that he has had interactions with some of the other party members at different times. It's really neat.
Yeah. And he's not nice. So even as he comes on your party, he's not like just completely a converted character. He is, I mean, because of his tragic past, he does have a lot of flaws, and he does fight the team. You do fight him once, at least in the story, and he's super powerful, and he's got all of these magical elements, and they're all shadow or like dark elements. And it's a difficult boss fight, but once you bring him on your team, I mean, he's a welcomed addition. He's super strong. He looks amazing. He's kind of got this bluish tint to his skin. He's got this long white hair, a red cape, and this huge scythe that is his weapon.
Could you go with a more stereotypical weapon for an evil character wielding shadow magic?
I'm with it. I think scythes are cool.
I think it works well. I think his story is so layered. And it's interesting, it's one of the things, one of the difficulties I have with Chrono Trigger, in that Magus is one of your deepest, most interesting characters when Chrono is your least. And so I don't mind Magus being this deep character, but I would also love some of the main characters to have some of this depth as well. And Chrono has the least. Some of your other characters, all of your other party members, they have a little bit more. Some of them not as much as others, but the one that has the most is this guy who you first think is your primary antagonist, your enemy, who eventually can join your party and finally get his revenge.
And Dustin, I love that your two choices kind of have a theme going, like Chrono's super vapid, and then you have like all this super rich history with Magus.
Yeah.
My picks are also themed. So I chose Luca as my first character, but now we're going to be talking about Robo. And Robo is by far my favorite character in this game. If you can't tell by the name, he is a robot. But you need to go look at his artwork. It's so detailed and so sick looking. Like, it's such good artwork. It really is. And he looks cool in game too. And he's very girthy. He's got a girthy...
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. He's definitely got girth.
He's girthier than Frog.
No, the... Frog isn't even who I was talking about had girth. Like,
oh,
well, Isla's the one that's
okay,
got girth.
Freak.
I forgot to bring it up, but she's girthy.
No, she's thick. 2 C's.
She's thick with 2 C's. Robo is girthy, though. Don't get
all right,
it twisted.
Move on.
Robo. So you meet Robo in 2300 AD. So this is a character from the future. Maybe our first one, and actually it might be the only character in your party.
The only party member, yeah.
Yeah, so he's from the future, and the future is not looking great. So in that future, apparently evil prevailed, and everything looks really bad, and it actually looks like post-apocalyptic and pretty futuristic, but it's all like barren and destroyed.
Yeah. In 1999, that's when Lavos comes up from the earth and destroys the world. So this is way in the aftermath of that.
Yeah, right. So you come across this warehouse that you don't really know what's going on. It's still kind of early in the game, actually. And you come across this pile of rubble that turns out to be a robot, and Luca freaks out because she's like, oh my goodness, this is amazing, I think I can save him. And they're like, no, don't do that, like, what are you doing, these things have been attacking us. And she's like, no, you don't need to be afraid of these things, humans are the reason why they are evil, or why they are viewed that way. So they're like, whatever. So she fixes Robo up, and sure enough, he's very friendly to humans, and he is in service of Luca now because she saved him, and he's so cool. So Robo is actually really strong in battle. He has no weaknesses because he's a robot, so he doesn't have any elemental weaknesses that you have to worry about, and he's thick, he can take damage, and he's got some pretty serious damage. I think he's such a overpowered like battle character. But like, oh man, I could talk about Robo for a while. But one of the main reasons most of the reasons why I love these characters is tied to the plot. So Luca and Robo at one point of the story volunteers to sacrifice himself and stay behind in, gosh, I don't even know what time frame, but it's in the past, and something that he has to hold off something for an amount of time.
Yeah, hold the doors so that they can get through or something.
Right. So he holds the door open for them, they get through, and then he stays there. But you come back to him, and like in that time, he's been contemplating Lavos and all of the reasons why all this time travel stuff is happening. And he's like, I don't think Lavos is forcing this on us. I think it might be this entity. And he starts getting like really introspective, and oh my goodness, it's so good.
So here's my question. Being the only party member from the future, once you correct and take care of Lavos, the 1999 destruction didn't happen, which means the 2300 discovery of, and maybe even the creation of this precious robot, what? It didn't happen?
It did happen.
No, listen.
It just only happened once.
So they talk about that at the end, and Luca's super sad about it, and he's pretty sad, but he goes in the portal. And not only that, but when he arrives, he's still in existence, but he also runs into his female robot love interest that you actually fight earlier in the game. So his lore is that he was friendly to humans and sympathetic, where his leader was not, and she hated humans and was mad about the world and reprogrammed him or whatever, or reprogrammed his love interest. But now they are sitting on a cliffside overlooking the beautiful future together.
Yeah. So his story is really one of rediscovering emotion, because when you first find him, he's lost his programming for the most part. He doesn't know how to express emotion or have these human feelings. And I think a lot of his story through the game is trying to rediscover that. And Luca, his friend, teaches him a lot of that. It's a really cool relationship there.
Love it.
Speaking of really cool relationships.
You don't have to have a segue if you don't want to.
Oh, I certainly don't have to, but it's a natural and perfect one to have, because my favorite character from this game, although Robo certainly has a place in my heart as well, has probably some of the most in-the-feels relationship moments of this entire game, maybe of all of video gaming. That's probably overstating it a little
bit. I don't know about that, but he does have probably second to Magus. I would probably put him second to Magus. No, in the depth and the layering.
In terms of depth of the story. Yeah.
Okay, I thought we were still trolling it.
Okay. No. I think Frog does have so much narrative there, and yeah. I love it. Just like Magus, it's slowly revealed throughout the game.
Yeah, and a lot of the plot even intertwines with his story. And so when they're traveling back in time and different things, they're doing it kind of on his quest to some degree, and it works well. And so we know this character as Frog, and like Robo, that means you can probably picture what he is. He is a frog, but not the tiny little hop around kind, the kind that used to be a human. So he's an anthropomorphic frog, and his character's original name in his human form was Glenn. But he's kind of left that identity behind for most of the game, at least, and is simply known as a frog. He's not just a frog, however. He's also become a really strong knight. And that doesn't happen automatically, because some of his interesting backstory is really intertwined with some of the things Dustin talked about with Magus. But he is a squire to Cyrus, who is one of the main knights in the Middle Ages. And Cyrus goes off to fight Magus and is killed. And it's tragic. And Glenn, Frog, doesn't do anything about it in the fight. He feels like he's unable to help. And so then carries this giant burden of sort of guilt and shame that he's taking with him through the whole game. And so much of his story is his sort of accepting his strength and willing to step forward and fight battles and to put his past behind him, and really just neat thematic things.
Well, when you find him, he has even refused to fight. You have to do some other quests and accomplish some certain things regarding and related to his story to even get him to join the team.
He's always been a little bit of a pacifist. Even like as a kid, he was that way, which is why he was a squire originally and not a knight. And so this stuff just messes him up. He doesn't want to fight, but finally when Cyrus dies, he realizes, you know, hey, I need to fight, and dedicates himself to kind of getting back at all of these things, and yet is very reluctant at the same time. It's really kind of nuanced. Cyrus tried to kill Magus with the one weapon that could take him on, the Masamune, and that didn't go well. And so Frog eventually helps the rest of the team really is sort of pushing this, sees the Masamune reforged and gets it back to Frog. And it's one of those really neat moments where this sword ends up becoming empowered by sort of the spirit of his friend as he lays him to rest more fully. And it's just a really deep, heartfelt kind of, probably the most human of all of the stories, which is ironic because, well, he's a frog.
Can we talk about his little hopping animation?
Yeah, absolutely.
So good.
He's always hopping around everywhere, and his legs go so high, like even higher than his head. It's just a funny, goofy hopping animation as he hops around. And he's got these little, these little things that makes it look like he's got a mustache, you know, of sorts. All of his abilities are water related, or he attacks with a tech using his tongue. So it's very thematic in who he is and how he operates.
It is, and it's so fun. And at least in the first English Super Nintendo version of the game, he talks very much like a, I guess, like what we would stereotypically think of a knight as talking like. He sort of these and thous his way through the game, which is sort of fun and gives him a distinct personality. And I don't know, he's fascinating to me. He's also a really just strong character. Being a knight, he really does function like that in your party. Deals a lot of damage, you know, is healing, is helping, and finally sees resolution. And it's just, he's great.
He definitely fits you, Kenny. I don't know where you got this frog obsession with, but I don't know if you know Dustin, he names all of his characters in Path of Exile about frogs.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe from this game.
No, that's not the case. That one's an easy explanation. Like, in that game, all of my characters have frog names only because I had leftover in-game currency at one point and bought some pet frogs. And so my character just runs around with frogs with him all the time. But I'm going to tell everybody it's because of Frog now, and
it's
not
definitely
for
because
that
of
reason.
Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, it's Chrono Trigger. It was the whole time, and I didn't even know it.
Well, those are our six characters. There are definitely more characters in this game that we could have talked about, but out of the characters in Chrono Trigger, we wanted to share with you six of our favorites, six of the most nuanced, six of the most interesting characters of Chrono Trigger for this special bonus episode, Characters of Chrono Trigger. We thanked our patrons at the top of the show, but want to give a special shout out to our producers, those that really helped to carry the burden of this show, and that is Bradley, Zion, and Gimbarino. We are eternally grateful for your support. And that just about wraps it up for this bonus element episode, Characters of Chrono Trigger. Until next time, I'm still Dustin.
I'm still Kenny.
I'm still Yasunori Mitsuda. He did the soundtrack.
And this has been another bonus episode of New Game Plus.